earlier today, the President of the United States, in a statement, said on the passing of Dr. Maya Angelou, when her friend Nelson Mandela passed away last year, Maya Angelou wrote that no sun outlasts the sunset, but will rise again and bring the dawn. Today, Michelle and I join millions around the world in remembering one of the brightest lights of our time, a brilliant writer, a fierce friend, and a truly phenomenal woman. Over the course of her remarkable life, Maya was many things: an author, poet, civil rights activist, playwright, actress, director, composer, singer, and dancer. But above all, she was a storyteller, and her greatest stories were true. A childhood of suffering and abuse actually drove her to stop speaking, but the voice she helped found helped generations of Americans find their rainbow amidst the clouds and inspired the rest of us to be our best selves. In fact, she inspired my own mother to name my sister Maya. Like so many others, Michelle and I will always cherish the time we were privileged to spend with Maya. And with a kind word and strong embrace, she had the ability to remind us that we are all God's children, that we all have something to offer. And while Maya's day may be done, we take comfort in knowing that her song will continue, flung up to heaven, and we celebrate the dawn that Maya Angelou helped bring. That's a statement of the President of the United States. Congressman Andre Carson issued a statement, and among what he said was, Dr. Maya Angelou not only spoke to us, but she spoke of us, painting a picture of our nation with words. She showed us that we can always be more than the labels and limitations others place on us. She taught that we have a duty to stand up for those among us who are treated as less. Dr. Angelou will always be a voice for the voiceless and a champion for equality in those facing great adversity. We mourn her passing, but we celebrate her life, her work, her contributions to our nation and world. I believe she would want us to find the light in this time of sadness, and we should honor her in that way. And Sister Oprah Winfrey on her Instagram site said, I've been blessed to have Maya Angelou as my mentor, mother, sister, and friend since my 20s. She was there for me always, guiding me through some of the most important years of my life. But what stands out to me most about Maya Angelou is not what she has done or written or spoken. It's how she lived her life. She moved through the world with unshakable calm, confidence, and a fierce grace. I loved her, and I know she loved me. I will profoundly miss her. She will always be the rainbow in my clouds, the words of Oprah Winfrey. Last September, Maya Angelou visited Butler University. She was the initial speaker over 25 years ago with the Butler University Celebration of Diversity Lecture Series. They brought her back on the anniversary, had the privilege to bring her to the stage, to share the stage with literally a living legend, living world history. Originally, Dr. Angelou was supposed to visit Indianapolis in April of last year, and I had the distinct honor and privilege of interviewing her for this program back in March of 2013. There was no better way to remember the greatness that was Dr. Maya Angelou and all she stood for. It came out in this interview from literally, was it middle of March 2013. We will end the show with a highlight of my life and career, just having the privilege of sharing some time just via the telephone with one of God's greats, Maya Angelou. Usually I don't get intimidated when I have the honor and the privilege of interviewing living history, but in the person that I have on my line, Dr. Maya Angelou, I am probably the most nervous I have been in 38 years in broadcasting. Oh, Dr. Angelou, it is an honor and a privilege to speak to you.
It is my delight, and I thank you very much.
You're coming to Indianapolis. Do you remember the first time you ever visited Naptown?
I don't know if it was the first time. I remember being there any number of times. Mm-hmm. I was there many years ago when you had just opened a library.
Yes.
It was so startling, so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I go there occasionally to speak. And I also have a dear friend there, the great poet, Miss Marie Evans.
Yes, yes, yes,
and
yes.
So I go there to visit her.
When I went to your website and was reading all about you and just learned just so much history there, but when I found out that you ran a cable car in San Francisco, I was trying to visualize that.
Well, I didn't really run it. I was a conductorette, they called it.
So you were taking the tickets.
Well, they were taking the money because they didn't have tickets at that time.
I've got to ask you. You've done so much in your life. I mean, yes. It's a life well lived. Who excites you today as you look out over the world and the personalities in the world? Who excites Maya Angelou in 2013?
Mr. Brown, there are so many people, young people and old people, and I am impressed and loyal to the thought and memory of Nelson Mandela and his wife, Winnie, the first wife. And my thoughts go back to many people who passed on. And then I was interviewed yesterday by a young person who must be about 20 years old, and that impressed me because she wants to learn. I love to go to community colleges because many times the people who go to the colleges have dropped out from regular school, and years later they've realized that they really need education. So they go back with an eagerness to learn, and that eagerness, that delight in getting more information just thrills me, because I know sooner or later somebody's going to find an answer to breast cancer.
Hello.
And to prostate cancer. Somebody's going to find an answer to how to get rid of this racism which saddles our country and brutalizes and cripples us. At some point, it's one of those young people. One of those people maybe sitting on the seventh row in the auditorium, or the first row in a classroom. So they excite me.
You know, sometimes on our program we have, adults in your generation and my generation, because I've got a lot of gray hair as I push in my sixth decade of life. We tend to look down on today's young people. We don't understand their dress. We don't understand the greater propensity toward violence and settling conflicts through violent means. They're protect from our point of view, perhaps a lack of discipline. But you talk at a lot of colleges still today, community colleges.
Yes.
You talk to a lot of young people. Are you pessimistic or optimistic?
I'm positive.
Mm.
I am positive. And, I think that some of us, you're doing flip to me. I'm pressing on. In a couple of weeks, I'll be 85.
My Lord.
Yes, sir. Resolve, and I'm grateful. So I think that we forget how obstreperous we were in our teens. And how the parents said, "What on earth are you turning that bad music up?" I know that when I was growing up and in my teens, I loved bebop and Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie and Max Roach and those. And my mother, who loved gospel music and the blues, just said, "I can't even understand why. There's nobody singing." So I think we forget, and we don't take the time to realize that they're growing. And they are using what they've got to get more. And so we need to have patience and love instead of the criticism for the young people.
You were also a young single mom.
Yes,
and
I was.
One of the things that gets discussed on this program is a feeling again by the older generation that young single moms today don't have the capability and the capacity of raising children the way that you raised yours. How would you address that?
Well, I know that my mother, my mother really was a great woman. I have a new book coming out in a few weeks called Mom, Me, and Mom. But one of the things she did when I guess my son was about 4 or 5, and I had 2 jobs. So I'd take him to the babysitter, and I'd go to 2 jobs, and when I'd get home, I would pick him up and bring him home and give him some food. I don't know how soon I could cook it, and go to bed. And the next morning, take him right back. And each time I'd leave, he would just weep. He became allergic to everything. All sorts, I mean, milk and tomatoes and bread. And I, on top of being having the two jobs and trying to pay my rent and food and the babysitter, I had to also pay an allergist. Mm-hmm. Well, I read that sometimes your child may not be allergic. She or he may not just be getting the attention he needs. But I told my mother, I said, that is the stupidest thing. People say that because these are women who have husbands and have somebody to help them. My mother said, I'm going to make an investment in you. I'm going to give you $1,000. Mr. Brown, I may have been 20. She said, I'm going to make an investment. I want you to get rid of one of those jobs and take your time to pay me back. But you know me, I want my money. Mm-hmm. But you take Guy to school. You take him there, and then you bring him back. Well, I dropped one of the jobs, and I did that. Within a month, the rashes started going away. Mr. Brown,
yeah.
He hasn't had a rash since then.
Amen.
And so it's a lot. It depends on the parent. Mm. The parent really needs to have more patience and more support instead of always criticizing. So my mother, I did pay her back. It probably took me about 2 years. She never berated me or anything.
We're talking with Dr. Maya Angelou. Dr. Angelou, when you're going to be speaking at Butler University for the Celebration of Diversity lecture series, you're going to be on the stage of Clues Hall, and you might have flashbacks to all the stage performances you have, because Clues Hall is built like a Broadway stage with the big fly space, and Broadway shows and ballet are there. And I think a lot of people listening don't know that you toured Europe with Porgy and Bessie, and you did a lot of things on stage before you got to the writing thing.
Oh, yes. And then I have a Tony nomination from being on Broadway in a play called Look Away with Geraldine Page, a two-character play.
Well, you're going to feel at home at Clues Hall then when you walk backstage.
I tell you the truth, Mr. Amos Brown. Yeah. I feel at home wherever human beings are.
Hello.
I don't know how I'd feel with zebras or fleas or crocodiles, but I know human beings are there. I feel at home.
You mentioned got a brand new book coming out, and when you started writing, it was just, you know, a hardback and paperback. So is this book going to be hardback and all this electronic stuff?
Oh, yes, it's going to be all of that.
What do you think about all this electronic, you know, the printed word now electronically?
Well, I think that the social media gives us a chance to learn how more alike we are. We're more alike than we are unalike. Mm. And so when you can read that Asian people cry when they're sad and Hispanic people laugh when they're happy and white people eat when they're hungry and black people worship or dance and learn when they're thirsty for knowledge, then you think, oh, I see. Oh, I thought they were different. Okay.
Right.
You see? So the social media helps us to learn more about each other. And it gives us another chance to rid ourselves of this ignorance that cripples us and runs us crazy.
How do you think our president's doing?
I like him. I think he's a knockout. And I love the fact that he's in for the second term because it means that my country is growing up a little bit.
Mm. I had the privilege about a couple of months ago going up to Ball State University and David Letterman was interviewing your good friend Oprah Winfrey.
Yes.
and a part of Oprah's life that I did not realize, some of the negative. And David Letterman in this public lecture, you know, asked, Oprah, how did you overcome all the negative things that happened to you? How did you overcome? Letterman was just so amazed that someone that experienced so much negativity in their life could overcome and be such a powerful, positive force. But that happens all the time with people, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And, I mean, the main thing I'd like to encourage, especially young people, but anybody, is don't carry a grudge. That just weighs you down. Don't do that. Don't. Just forgive. Try to learn to forgive as soon as possible. Forgive. Yes, sir.
Isn't that? But that's now in this day and time. That's almost the hardest thing for people to grasp today.
So people say, but it's wonderful to do it. Forgive, and one of the things I do is I give far. I just turn that word around.
Right.
And if somebody has hurt my feelings or been disloyal or betrayed me, I will go to the supermarket and fill up a cart with food and take it to my church to give to some needy family.
Right.
And I say, I'm giving this. I say this to God. I'm giving this for Joe or Flo, who hurt my feelings willingly. So I'm finished with it.
Tell me something about, I know you work very closely with both Dr. Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. How were the two of them alike or different?
No, they were more alike than they were different.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that very few people know is that both had extremely keen senses of humor.
Really?
Oh, they could. I just remember going out following Dr. King to speak and coming back to the office or coming back to the church and finding that he told us some jokes or some stories so funny that the whole car would be, excuse me, I'm sorry for
that's
that.
That's okay. That's all right.
There's somebody at my gate. It's another interview.
Okay.
We would be rolled over in laughter. And that was true with Malcolm X. But sometimes when people write about men and women of note, they make them sound bigger than life. And that's dangerous because a young person has to say, you mean to tell me that with all that they were and did, you mean to tell me we still have racism, we still have ageism and sexism and classism? Well, then I bet there's nothing for me to do. I'll never be as big as they are, you see?
Yeah.
And so we lose our young people many times because we overrate. What we have to say is Malcolm X was a human being.
Yeah.
And Joe Dokes is a human being. You see?
Absolutely.
Mr. Brown, I'm sorry to say I really have another interview.
And you have been extraordinarily gracious with your time. I look forward to seeing you in Indianapolis
Please
at Clues Hall.
Please come back and say hello to me.
I get to be the one, master of ceremonies. It's going to be my honor. I look forward to meeting you. Dr. Maya Angelou, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Our interview from March of 2013 with Dr. Maya Angelou, who God called home this morning a little after 8 o'clock, Indianapolis time. God bless her. God bless her family. Tomorrow, the police chief and the public safety director, a community conversation about violence and crime in Indianapolis. I'm Amos Brown. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow, live at 1.